Okay.
We've had a study this last week or two about Hosea chapter 1 through chapter 3. Can anybody give us a review of what we've gone through so far?
Israel was being bad and Hosea told them.
Okay, so that's pretty brief description, but it's very accurate. Israel had just gone off. Had they had a righteous king in their 200 years of existence? Never had one righteous king, did they? Just a series, one right after another. And as the Lord tried to bring them back to good standing with him, as he encouraged them, helped them along, as he's punished them from time to time, trying to get their attention. Did it work?
No.
No, they just kept getting worse and worse, didn't they? I think 1 year there, they had four different kings in 1 year. They were slaughtering each other and assassination. Yeah, Billy.
We know that Judah was miraculously helped when they were surrounded by the enemy more than once. What's surprising, if you're really paying attention, he actually did that for Israel once. He saved them when they were about to be destroyed.
Yeah.
Because he had a remnant he wanted to preserve.
That's right. That it? All right. Yeah, that is right. Of course, you know, as far as he was, God, you know, sent a number of prophets to the people of Israel, the northern 10 kingdoms or tribes. And did they listen to the prophets? They murdered him. So when Hosea came along, This was a real risky business for him, wasn't it? I think God protected him for that reason, and because so many of the prophets were being killed off. Do you remember who murdered a bunch of the prophets?
Jezebel.
Jezebel, sure. She got a whole bunch of them together and murdered them. And so she was especially in God's crosshairs. She was so devoid of goodness that God was determined to destroy it. Yeah.
It was interesting and kind of an eye-opener. We think of the prophets we see in the Bible. But during her time, there was a prophet, I think it was Obadiah, that hid and fed, I don't remember, it was 200 or 400 prophets of God that were in Israel. And we don't normally think of there being that many, especially all at one time.
Well, I think that there were lots of them. And of course, there were a lot of bad prophets as well they're called prophets, so I'm assuming that God accepted them as prophets. They just weren't prophets for the good of Israel. They were evil, basically. They did what the kings and the priests wanted them to do, rather than saying what God wanted them to say. And God, or Hosea here, and God through Hosea here, is telling what's going to happen to these prophets and all these priests and so forth as time goes by. Hosea is giving them this warning and trying to tell them this is what's going to happen. Judah was more righteous. They had their ups and downs. They had good kings and bad kings. But one particular one during this period of prophecy with Hosea was Hezekiah. And he was saved through God's grace with the Assyrians that came and said that they were going to destroy Judah and take it. And what happened to the king, the Syrian king, Sennacherib was his name. You remember, he came and he surrounded Judah, or Jerusalem. And what happened to it?
Was he the one who was murdered by his sons?
Yes, later on. Yeah, later on, when after he was defeated, God came through and sent an angel of death, and they killed 180,000 of his soldiers there that were surrounding the city of Jerusalem. And so he went home, and that's while he was in the temple of his God, worshiping his God, his two sons murdered him. And not sure the reason for that, because they fled to Armenia. So I don't know what they had in it for him or what they thought they had in it for themselves, but they disappeared into history and when they fled to Armenia. Okay, so what else do we know about chapters 1, 2, 3?
Didn't he have more than two sons?
Yeah.
So that one?
Yeah.
Oh, he was a king, he probably had 50 or 60.
That's why I think they went into hiding, is they killed him and then they left because they were afraid.
Yeah, could very well be, but usually when something like that happened, and the throne was usurped, usually the people who conspired against the king were taken care of. So they lost their lives most of the time. Okay, what else do we know? Jose married a lady. She was an angel.
Yes.
Yeah.
So long as you paid her, she was an angel.
Okay. So Gomer. Why did God pick Gomer? Why did God tell Jose to go find a woman?
She was an unfaithful wife.
Unfaithful wife, yeah.
Because Israel's unfaithful to God.
She was an example. She was part of a prophecy.
Well, that is true also. But he was told to go marry a woman of whoredom. Now, whether or not she was unfaithful to begin with, because her first son... What was his name, by the way?
Jezreel.
He was Gomer's biological son. Mm-hmm. Now, he had two daughters also. What was her name? Anybody remember? You don't have to pronounce her Jewish name.
Oholibah and Oholibamah, I believe.
Yeah, what do they mean?
One was a girl. I thought she
had two girls.
Yeah.
One boy. Jezreel was the son, and then... Name the second child what? No Mercy?
Yeah, Larumaha or something.
I'm sorry?
Larumaha?
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, I don't remember what. But it was transcribed as No Mercy, which meant no mercy in name. And also, what about the second one?
She had two sons.
She had Jezreel, and then she had another.
Weren't they daughters?
No. The third child was a son.
Okay, so they had two sons and a daughter. Then okay. What was about the third son? The third child? What was his name?
Not my people.
Not my people.
And I will not.
Who's he talking about? Who's God talking about here?
Israel,
sure. This is where he's concentrating his thoughts. You think while Judah was on the wayside over here, out of sight, you think he was out of God's sight, what they were doing? God had his eye on those people in Judah, didn't he? Okay.
Ron, did you say she was not a... whatever she was when they got married?
Prostitute,
thank you, I guess you know the word.
I think what he said...
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch it.
I think what he said was that he thought she was faithful to him to start off the marriage, not that she hadn't been a harlot before she married him.
She may have been, but there's some conjecture there, and one person, one specialist says this, and one scholar says this, and so it's a little bit of guesswork there, but we know that she was not a faithful wife. That she went off and left him after a while. And we'll find that he went back and bought her back. So apparently she had run up some bills. And how she did that, said that just she owed her lovers. And Gomer, because he loved her, and I think he loved her and was faithful to her, he went back and bought, he paid her debts, didn't he? And bought her back. Okay, so anything else we want to touch base with before we go on to four? Yeah, Bill.
I have a question. It's kind of peripheral, but Jonah, when he went to Nineveh, which was an Assyrian city, do we know who the king of Nineveh was at that time?
I don't remember. I don't think it was ever mentioned. I don't think his name was. It may have been, but I haven't looked at Jonah for a long time.
I'm kind of curious if that was the son that took over for Sennacherib.
I'm not sure that Jonah was contemporary. I don't think he was contemporary with Hosea. Jonah was at a later time, I believe.
It doesn't seem
but
like.
We will be studying Jonah along with the other minor prophets, and we'll touch a very short book.
Yeah.
So there's not a whole lot to it. I think we're all familiar with the basic story at least.
Yeah.
And I kind of brought up the thought. I was looking the other day. I was looking at some info on my iPad, and it was talking about finding these gigantic shark teeth. And so I don't remember where it was, someplace in the world. They found these gigantic shark teeth, and taking the tooth from a great white or some of the larger larger sharks, they estimated that this tooth came from a shark that was over 50 feet long. So it was certainly big enough to swallow Jonah, if that was the case. But you know, it says God prepared a fish. That's all I care about. I worry about whether or not it was a whale or a shark or whatever. But anyway, it's kind of curious. I saw that. Okay, so we've studied the last study we had is 1, 2, and 3, and I have some extra ones here if you'd like to have them from last week. If you want to take one, I hope everybody got one Sunday. So anyway, that is chapter 3. Okay, so we're going to go to chapter 4 through chapter 7. And I'd like to just read this tonight. And then I have some questionnaires here that you can take home and take your time to fill out. And we'll look at it in detail next week. But I'll start out, and then we'll just kind of go around the room. And let's start chapter 4, verse 1. People of Israel, listen to the Lord's message. The Lord says he has this against you who live in this country. The people are not true. They're not loyal to God. They do not even know him. They curse. They lie. They kill. They steal. They are guilty of adultery. They break all my laws. One murder follows another. Because of this, the land dries up, and all its people are dying off. Even the wild animals are dying. Even the birds of the air and the fish of the sea are dying. No one should accuse or blame another person. Don't blame the people, you priests. When they quarrel with you, you will be ruined one of these days, and your prophets will be ruined with you one of these nights. I will also destroy your mother, the nation of Israel. My people will be destroyed because they have no knowledge. You priests have refused to learn, so I will refuse to let you be priests to me. You have forgotten the teachings of your God, so I will reject your children. The more priests there are, the more they sin against me. I will take away their honor and give them nothing but shame. The priests live off the offerings of the people, the sin offering. So they want people to sin more and more. The priests are as wrong as the people. I will punish them both for what they have done. I will repay them for the wrong they've done. They will eat, but not have enough. They will have sexual relations with the prostitutes, but they won't have children. This is because they left the Lord. Who wants to pick up on verse 11?
Harlotry, wine, and new wine take away the understanding. My people consult their wooden idols, and their diviners' wands inform them. For a spirit of harlotry has led them astray, and they have played the harlot, departing from their God. They offer sacrifices on the tops of the mountains, and they burn incense on the hills under oaks, poplar, and terebinth, because their shade is pleasant. Therefore, your daughters play the harlot, and your brides commit adultery. I will punish your daughters, and they will play the harlot. For your brides, they commit adultery. For the men themselves go apart with harlots and sacrifices in temples, prostitutes. Some people without understanding are ruined. Though you, Israel, play the harlot, do not let Judah become guilty. Also, do not go to Gilgal or up to Beth-Aven and take the oath, as the Lord lives. Since Israel is stubborn, like a stubborn heifer, can the Lord now pasture them like a lamb in a large field? Ephraim is joined to idols, let him alone. Their languor gone, liquor gone, and their harlot, they play the harlot continually. Their rulers dearly love shame. The wind wraps them in its wings, and they will be ashamed because of their sacrifices.
Okay, about 5 through 10. Chapter 5, 1 through 10.
Hear this, O priests. Take heed, O house of Israel. Give ear, O house of the king. For yours is the judgment, because you have been a snare to Mizpah, and a net spread over Tabor. The revolters are deeply involved in slaughter. Though I rebuke them all, I know Ephraim, and Israel is not hidden from me. For now, O Ephraim, you commit harlotry. Israel is defiled. They do not direct their deeds towards turning to their God. For the spirit of harlotry is in their midst, and they do not know the Lord. The pride of Israel testifies to his face. Therefore, Israel and Ephraim stumble in their iniquity. Judah also stumbles with them. With their flocks and their herds, they shall go to seek the Lord, but they will not find him. He has withdrawn himself from them. They have dwelt treacherously. Wow. I usually like to practice. They have dwelt treacherously with the Lord's. They have begotten pagan children, for a new moon shall devour them and their heritage. Blow the ram's horn in Gilgal, the trumpet of Ramah. Cry aloud at Beth-Haven. Look behind you, O Benjamin. Ephraim shall be desolate in the days of rebuke. Among the tribes of Israel, I will make known what is sure. The princes of Judah are like those who removed a landmark. I will pour out my wrath on them like water.
11 through the end of the chapter.
Ephraim is oppressed and broken in judgment because he willingly walked by human precept. Therefore, I will be to Ephraim like a moth and to the house of Judah like rottenness. When Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his gloom, then Ephraim went to Assyria and sent to King Jareb. Yet he cannot cure you nor heal you of your wound. For I will be like a lion to Ephraim and like a lion to the house of Judah. I will tear them and go away. I will take them away and no one shall rescue. I will return again to my place till they acknowledge their offense. Then they will seek my face. In their affliction, they will earnestly seek me.
Okay, somebody want to read chapter 6?
Come,
let us return to the Lord.
for he has torn us, but he will heal us. He has wounded us, but he will bandage us. He will revive us after 2 days. He will raise us up on the third day, that we may live before him. So let us know, let us press on to know the Lord. His going forth is as certain as the dawn, and will come to us like the rain, like the spring rain watering the earth. What shall I do with you, O Ephraim? What shall I do with you, O Judah? For your loyalty is like a morning cloud, and like the dew which goes away early. Therefore I have hewn them in pieces by the prophets. I have slain them by the words of my mouth. And the judgments on you are like the light that goes forth. For I delight in loyalty rather than sacrifice, and in the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings. But like Adam, they have transgressed the covenant. There they have dealt treacherously against me. Gilead is a city of wrongdoers, tracked with bloody footprints. And as raiders wait for a man, so a band of priests murder on the way to Shechem. Surely they have committed crime. In the house of Israel, I have seen a horrible thing. Ephraim's harlotry is there. Israel has defiled itself. Also, O Judah, there is a harvest appointed for you when I restore the fortunes of my people. For Israel has forgotten.
I'd like to heal Israel, but their sin can be seen by everybody. The wickedness of Israel is just too well known. They cheat one another. They break into the other people's houses. There are robberies in the streets. It never enters their minds that I remember all of their wicked deeds. The bad things they do are all around, and I can see their sins clearly. They make the king happy with their wickedness. They make the rulers glad with their lies. But all of them are traitors. They are like an oven heated by a baker while he mixes the dough. He does not stir up the flame. They hold a festival day for the king. On that day, the rulers become drunk with wine. The king joins in with those who had made evil plans. They approach him with murder in mind. Their hearts are like a hot oven. All night long, its fire is low. When morning comes, it's flamed into flame. So all of these people are as hot as an oven, like a fire. They destroy their rulers, their kings fall one after another, and no one calls on me. Now that's the work we'll be studying about next week. I've got some questions. Try to keep it on one page, so that you'll have to use another page to write your answers. And we'll look into this in detail next week and have a fun time studying. But it'll be an interesting study. And then the following week, I think we'll try to finish up on the book of Hosea. And then we'll get into Micah for the following week.
Just like the dinner table.
Yes, ma'am.
What's the difference between Ephraim and has to do any work?
Well, Ephraim was part of Israel. Ephraim was one of the northernmost states, both tribes of Israel, and it was the most powerful. By a long shot, and that's because of the location. And because of the people that they could put out in the field, as far as an army was concerned, they were the first to be attacked.
And
so,
wasn't Ephraim one of the 12 tribes?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Do you know whose son Ephraim was?
Pardon?
Yeah, Jacob.
I'm sorry?
Jacob. Jacob.
No.
No, never did. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Yeah.
He wondered.
He was adopted by Jacob. He was Joseph's son.
There you go.
Joseph's son.
He was Joseph's son.
As far as we're concerned, though, he's supposed to be a son of Israel.
He was the youngest son of Jacob. Who was the oldest?
Manasseh.
Yeah, Manasseh. And why were there two tribes in Manasseh?
Because half of them stayed on one side of the Jordan because they liked the pastures and stuff, and half went over on the other side.
Hmm.
Okay, that's sort of true. I mean, it is true, but why were there two tribes? There were two tribes, two separate tribes of Manasseh. You talk about Manasseh and then the half-tribe of Manasseh.
Yeah.
You know. And you're right. That one of them chose to, because the pasture land was great on the eastern side of the Jordan River, they liked that, and so they decided, along with one of the other tribes, to take that land. But they went into the land of Canaan and fought alongside the rest of them. It was part of the deal. Yeah, Bill.
I believe Manasseh had two sons, and one stayed on one side, and the other one went into the land.
No.
No?
Two daughters. They had two daughters. And they went to Joshua, and they said, we don't have any inheritance, because the inheritance went to the sons. And they had, and Manasseh had two daughters. The two daughters were the ones that there were no male heirs. So Joshua gave them an equal voice in dividing the land.
Whoa.
But there weren't any male heirs, so the two daughters asked for an inheritance, and they got it.
I'm thinking that was somebody else that had five daughters.
$5?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. But anyway, I think, you know, a lot of strange things come out of the Old Testament that are kind of hard to understand. You know, do you remember what tribe was in the lineage of Jesus? What tribe was he from?
Judah.
I'm sorry?
Judah.
Yeah, the tribe of Judah. His lineage was the tribe of Judah. And it was interesting because there was a prostitute in there. There were, Ruth was a foreigner. She was from Moab. Although the Moabites were cousins to the Israelites, they were considered as foreigners, and yet, you know, this was through the lineage of David, and so you go down the way, and it's really interesting that you have all these unusual people in Christ's lineage, but he came through the tribe of Judah. And Judah wasn't the greatest of guys. He was going to kill his daughter-in-law. But why was that? Anybody know? Anybody remember that? Why Judah was going to kill his daughter-in-law?
Because he said she had played the harlot.
Yeah, that's true.
But he was the one that was guilty.
He was the father, yeah. Yeah, he was the father. And do you remember what his crime was, or what he failed to do?
He did. Giving his son to her.
Yeah, well, he had two sons that she married the first son and he died. She married the second son and he died. Third son, and that's what they did. They raised up children in the name of the father, and he didn't give her to the third son. And so she played the harlot. And
Is that the one where she stood with, she was by the side of the road and he went there?
Yeah.
She got his ring and
staff. Yeah, got his staff and his rod.
Yeah.
Seeker, yeah. Yeah, and pulled a trick on him, and so he paid for that. Anyway, these will be some nice questions we can talk about. First one is, what's chapter 4 about? You just answer these in general terms. You know, some of them asked specifically, but questions, but most of them are just in. Now, what do you see about Israel's condition?
Very sad.
Wrong.
What does Hosea mean by eat and not be satisfied? Yes, sir.
Going back to dividing a land, said, and this was the lot for the tribe of Manasseh, for he was the firstborn of Joseph. As for Machir, the firstborn of Manasseh, those were the ones on the east side of the Jordan. And the second lot was for Abiezer, I believe, for the children of Pelek and the children of, and one in the genealogy, but on down from that, Zelophehad, the son of Hefer, the son of Gilead, the son of Machir, a few generations later, he had no sons.
That's right.
But daughters, and then it names those, I believe it was five girls. So they were down line from Machir.
Yes, that's correct. They weren't, they were direct descendants of Manasseh.
Yeah.
But there were a number of generations that went back. Yeah. You've got to remember that the son of Joseph was born in Egypt.
Yeah.
And he never left Egypt along with the rest of the tribe. There went 400 years went by.
Yeah.
Approximately 400 years before the children of Israel left the land of Egypt and Moses came along. So there were a number of generations in between the actual Manasseh and his heirs that inherited the land. But it was because the son of Manasseh only had daughters. He had no sons. And that's why you have two tribes of Manasseh.
That was an interesting...
Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting sideline. Kind of got off the track a little
that
bit.
That was where that was. One of the first places I think that we see that God had respect for the family lineage, whether they were a son or a daughter.
Well, you know, the eldest son was the one that was the primary inheritor.
Normally, yeah.
He got a double portion, and all the rest of them got pieces or share, but the oldest son got a double portion. And that was his inheritance for being the oldest son. I never could quite understand that, but
he had to take care of the mother and the sisters if their husbands died, and yeah. He had to take them back into his house. So
yeah.
He needed lots of money because we women know how to spend, right?
Where'd they go?
You couldn't understand that because you weren't the oldest son.
that's very true. I wasn't the oldest son. Problem was, my oldest brother died early. A portion of it fell to us, but things are a little bit different nowadays than they were back in those days, for sure. But, okay, anyway, take these questions back, and Dean, would you do me a favor? If you get a chance, would you send one to Ann Decker?
Oh, yes.
Okay. I'd appreciate that very much. I don't know how to do that. So.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, anybody else have anything else to comment about tonight?